Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.
Gaur Premananda, Hari Hari Bol. Okay. Gandharvika sings like a Gandharva, right?
Gandharvika pieva kao Gandharva.
That's right. Favorite part of the seminar is hearing Gandharvika sing. The rest is just whatever happens afterwards. Okay, let's get this started. So what I thought, by popular request, before we actually start the gist of the seminar, we want to do just to warm up. I know it's very hot already, but to warm up, we want to do just a little bit of laugh yoga. So I'm going to give you just like a quick 5-minute laugh yoga seminar. It's going to go really fast.
5 minuta.
Normally it takes an hour.
Obično trebamo sat vremena.
But get ready to download the information.
Da, ono,
and then get ready to laugh. Because normally this is a whole seminar in and of itself.
Cijeli seminar za sebe.
So just a summary of laugh yoga. And we call this how to laugh without any reason.
Smijemo se bez razloga.
And the world is just too serious for us, right? Isn't the world too serious? It's too serious for me. And here's some statistics. In the 1950s, people laughed an average of 18 minutes a day. Now people laugh an average of 6 minutes a day. Children laugh 300 to 400 times a day. Adults laugh 15 times a day. That's why children are healthier than adults. So the physical benefits of laugh yoga, and 5 minutes of laugh yoga is equivalent to 1 hour of regular hatha yoga. Where's Dhirunatai? See here? Yeah. 5 minutes, 1 hour. Just think. And equivalent to 1 hour of jogging also. So just some basic benefits. The cardiovascular system becomes dilated, functions better. You get more oxygen. Your blood pressure goes down. You develop bigger muscles. Your mood becomes better. You become hopeful. You communicate more with people. You balance your right and left hemispheres of the brain, which is really cool. You're neither yin nor yang, but you're a good combination. You get more T cells, destroying all those wonderful cancer cells in your body. You get a lot of endorphins, that's the feel-good hormone. Solves all problems. So why do we chant Hare Krishna? And we can just laugh. Because if we chant Hare Krishna, we can laugh eternally. So, and for those of you who are old, it gets rid of the wrinkles that you have. Any old people here? Anyone over 40? Yes. Any of you have wrinkles? You laugh and get rid of the wrinkles? Any of you men losing your hair? Yeah. It creates more growth hormones. so your hair grows back. It's dangerous if you want to be a brahmachari. But if you're married, it's good. So, kills the pains that you have in the body, lowers the blood pressure, gets rid of multiple sclerosis, increases your stamina, respiratory system, digestive system. Wow, does everything. It's a panacea. Immunoglobulin A increases, gamma interferon, and the nice B cells. And gets rid of the cortisol and the stress hormones, like adrenaline. In the United States, $300 billion a year is spent on stress-related illnesses. Interesting, isn't it? Laughing helps your self-confidence. If someone wants to become confident and go on the stage, if you learn how to laugh, you'll be bold. Because you won't worry about what anyone thinks about you. So, increases creativity. It's good for actors, singers, and musicians. See? Very good. Builds communities, helps family relationships. Wow. I'm in the wrong movement. Helps you apologize, helps you make friends. Wow. Gets rid of negative emotions, helps you have catharsis. You can laugh your way through fear, anger, boredom. GBC meetings. I told them the story about the last GBC. You were there when we did that? Where we laughed and they were knocking on our door. And then I played my little thing here. You remember that? Okay, that was on popular request. They wanted to see that again. You don't become bored. And that is the whole seminar. Now we're going to do one laughing exercise. It's called the Guru laughing exercise. Because as we know, the Gurus are meant to chastise you, right? Yes, certain things get better with beating. The mridanga and disciples get better with beating, according to the Vedic literatures. Right? Isn't that the quote? Okay. So, chastising. So before, this is one exercise we're going to do, because we're not going to just, we'll get too silly, we won't be able to do anything else in this seminar. And so the one exercise we're going to do is called the chastising exercise. But before we do that, we have to do some regular old boring yoga exercises. And that's the stretch one. It's not that boring, but it gets you ready for, you know, aerobic laughter. So remember, everyone who attended my lab seminars, the two ones I gave in the Balkans in the last few weeks, most of the devotees. Okay, what this exercise is, and just watch how I do it, and then we're all going to do it together. It's called the Hiranyakasipu. It's a bona fide yoga exercise. Remember how Hiranyakasipu stood on his toes for how many years? Celestial years. Not just regular years. 100 celestial years. And like that. And he was very determined. So we're going to stand on our toes for 30 seconds. And as we stand on our toes and we breathe in. One yoga instructor saw I was doing this and they said, "You're too passionate." And I said, "That's my way. Too bad." They started criticizing me. So, as you stand on your toes, you're going to breathe in, raise your hands, and try to touch the ceiling here. We're all going to go through the nose, because that's the yoga breath. And then, after about 20, 30 seconds, we're all going to gradually let our breath out through the nose. And relax like that. Don't relax too much. This is not the past life regression seminar. because we're going to do the laughing right after that. Okay, so everybody on their feet. Quick. Too bad Dear Natai is not here. He should see this. He needs more laughter. We don't want to be serious yogis. That's boring. Okay, so right now, we're going to get on our tiptoes, raise the hands above the heads, touch the ceiling, and breathe in with your nose gradually. More, 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 more. It's easy for me to say. More. Until you can't fit any more, because you're also breathing with your diaphragm, you can't fit any more air in there. More, more, more. More air, and then gradually let it out with your nose. Gradually put your hands down and put your feet down. You don't have to stand on your toes. It's relaxing. And then we'll do it twice more. And again, breathe in, stand on your toes, keep breathing. More and more and more. Just gentle breaths, but breathing deeper and deeper and deeper with your nose. Stretching, standing on your toes, trying to touch the ceiling. See if you can touch the ceiling. If you can, I'll be very surprised. So but just try anyway. Just breathe in, keep breathing in. Okay, and we can't get any more breath in, then let it out gradually through the nose. Relax. Gradually, gradually, gradually. Let all the air out. Just all the air completely out using your diaphragm through your nose. And once more. Hands up. Hiranyakashipu, Kijai. The ceiling. In. More, more, more. More, more. Gently through the nose. More, 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 more air. Standing on your toes, reaching up, touching the ceiling. Very nice. And then when you can't breathe in anymore, just let it out gradually. Let your hands down gradually. Okay. That's very relaxing. And now we're going to do the fun part. The fun part is the guru laughter exercise. And what is required in laugh yoga is that we're going to have to look at each other's faces and keep circulating around. You understand? Like, I'll give you an example. Like, Trevor, come here. You look. And you're laughing. You will laugh. Don't worry about it. And you're laughing, and then you just do this exercise. I'm going to show you the exercise in a second. And then you go, you know, spend a few seconds with him and laugh. Look in his eyes. Because that's where the laughter comes. He's so funny. That you look at his eyes, you keep laughing, and then you go to the next person and look in their eyes. And you have to let all your inhibitions down when you do this. In Split, it was so amazing, I couldn't stop the devotees. I had to yell at them to stop laughing, and they wouldn't stop. But Split's the most fun place in the world, so that's a different Okay, and the exercise is like this. The guru is chastising the disciples. And you are chastising the other person. And you're laughing at the same time. This creates like a disparity between, like a difference between one action and another action, which is laughing, which actually gets you to your subconscious and allows you to express humor. Like we had another exercise where you cry for half the time and laugh the other half the time. You remember that? So we're going to go around, just circulate around. Normally we do it in semicircles, but we have too many people to do that. And normally we have two or three instructors that handle each semicircle. But you're all so spontaneous it'll happen. So let me give you a demonstration, because you need some more joy in your lives. So you remember how we did it? Just watch. Just watch how he and I do it. And you can do it chanting Hare Krishna. You know, if you feel uneasy about ha ha ha. Oh, let's do a little exercise first anyway. Let's do a ho ho ha 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 exercise. Just to get warmed up before I show you how to do this. So it's ho ho ha 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 ho ho ha ha. Ha ha! Everybody, ho ho ha ha ha, 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 ho ho. Okay, you're great. You know, don't you have to do the chastising exercise? So we're gonna. Sorry, I'm the Raganuga platform of laughter. So And some of the Astaga Sattvaga, Astaga Sattvaga, Hasha Bhavas are coming out. So anyway, so let's. So watch how I do it with him. You remember? All right. That's enough. Okay. But you, yeah, I like to have during the test. This is yoga. You'll be much happier. Instead of dry yoga, we got happy yoga, hasha yoga. Okay, just watch. You can add this to your repertoire. Okay, so now for about 1 or 2 minutes, that's it, because that's all the human body can take. And if any of you have heart conditions or recently had an operation, you can sit and watch. Because it may, you know, you may burst your stitches or something like that. Okay? So circulate, move from one person to another, few seconds with each person, and you keep moving. Ready? No, when I say go, don't be too spontaneous. We're going to go 3, 2, 1, and go. Okay. Three. These devotees from Split, they're just too much. All right. All right. 3, 2, 1, go. Can't stop him. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Everyone be seated. Seated and sad. What do you think? 5 minutes equivalent to 1 hour regular yoga, as far as the aerobic effects and everything. Look at them, all their chakras are open, prana is flowing. I'll tell you one funny joke. I forgot about the seminar already, but anyway, I'll tell you one funny joke before we begin the seminar. And Brajabihari Prabhu is going to help me with the seminar. He's a master teacher. And so he and I are going to be switching back and forth. But one just funny joke, we talk about prana and yoga. I just got a letter from one of my disciples in Finland, and she said, "What is your favorite food?" And as most of you know, I'm eating a raw diet now, so I wrote back, "My favorite food is prana." And then she wrote me back, "Please tell me how to prepare it." I don't know how to answer that question. Okay, so let's, before, today's topic is going to be blocks that block communication between people. But before we do that, I'm going to give you an interesting demonstration, a dramatic performance, that we're going to ask you all to participate in later on, maybe the next day. Not tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm not going to be here. Tomorrow I'm going to be seeing the president of Slovenia, so just taking the day off. But and doing some laugh yoga with him. So there will be. Brajabihari Prabhu is going to be giving a wonderful seminar on mediation, conflict, conflict resolution, general conflict resolution philosophy, right? And it's very important. Like, Vrajavihari is my Vartmaka Pradarshika guru with conflict resolution and mediation. He has turned me in from a mean, whatever it is, before, to a sensitive human being. Right? It's his fault. All right? So, remember we were talking yesterday about these four components of empathic communication, observations, feelings, needs, and requests? We're going to do a demonstration, show you how you can actually communicate with someone who is saying bad or nasty things to you. And we'll explain the philosophy behind that later, but I want you all to watch how we go through these four steps. When someone says something unpleasant to us, we have four ways that we can respond. Two ways are empathic, and two ways are actually out of touch with the heart. Okay? Two ways are our traditional ways of dealing. So we're going to put on an act right now. Linda, you ready? So we rehearsed this, so many times, and he feels real bad about this act, but so he's going to insult me in a very mean, cruel way. And I'm going to show you how someone would respond in each. These two ways are the, let's say, non-empathic ways. And these two ways are the empathic ways. So, okay, say something mean. Same thing, you remember how to say mean things.
You boring old man. Ti dosadni stari čovječe.
Okay, well, you got these backwards, actually. Okay. So the first way I can respond in a non-empathic way is blaming the person who said it and getting angry with him. You're a jerk. You're in Maya. I hate you. You're stupid. Get the hell out of here. That's blaming him, right? Okay, second way. Is that a healthy way to respond? No, because I've just become overcome by anger. Okay, second one is called blame me. In other words, I listen to what he says, and I take it on myself. Okay, say the same thing. He said, "You boring old man." Oh, I'm so boring. I'm so old. Nobody loves me. Even my mother didn't love me. Oh, no, I never want to give another class again. Okay, so I became very depressed, right? Okay. And now we move into empathic communication.
Sad prelazimo u empatičku komunikaciju.
The first one is involving me, where I get some self-empathy.
Prvo uključuje mene gdje sam.
It's called love me. So say the same thing. So he's saying, you boring old man. Okay. But I don't deny my feelings. What are my feelings? Anger. Any other feelings? Anybody have any other ideas? What other feelings I have? Sadness. Depression. All these feelings are there. So, let me go through this. So, I think in my mind I'm feeling really sad, depressed, disheartened. Because I have a need for loving exchange with the devotees. And I have a need for appreciation from the devotees. Now, as soon as I start to think like that, I understand that I have this need, and also I understand a method of getting those needs fulfilled, and it's obviously not with him. Because if I think, the problem with needs sometimes is that we think our needs are directed towards a specific individual, right? So we would say, this is the wrong way to express it, we would say, I need to have you love me. I need to have you appreciated me. Appreciate me. But needs are general. They're not focused. We can meet our needs. We can meet our needs in many different ways. Those different ways are called strategies. One problem, just to point this out, that people have in intimate relationships. That means when they're getting married or something like that, something reasonable facsimile, is that they think that all their needs can be met with the other person. What do they say? You are everything to me and I am everything to you. Whew. That's a big burden. So, you know, if a man gets married, he thinks his need for love, his need for eating good, his need for sporting activities, his need for intellectual stimulation. Think about all the needs you got. Needs for autonomy, his needs for celebration, everything can be met with his wife. He doesn't need his guru anymore. Everything, you know, the wife provides everything. And the wife is thinking, my need for protection, my need for spiritual instruction, my need for, what else? Anybody have any ideas?
Money.
Money, oh! But money is a strategy, it's not a need. That's important. Money is a strategy to meet the need for protection, for, you know, the necessities of life. We'll go over the difference between strategies and needs a little later. But all my needs for love, friendship, he can meet them. That's called the honeymoon stage. Then later on you discover that person cannot meet all your needs. And because your needs are focused on one individual, then what do? You get angry. You're supposed to love me. You're supposed to make money for me. You're supposed to be my friend. You're supposed to do this. And that destroys many relationships, isn't it? So people should understand there's many different strategies for fulfilling needs. Don't put it all on one person or several persons. You know, if you're married and you have a need for sporting activities, go bowling with the boys. Or, like our friend here, Trimagram, go wrestling with the boys. Okay, so that's love me, self-empathy it's called. Which is a really important thing. To actually give empathy to yourself, because if you don't do it, you won't be able to give empathy to others. If you're not in touch with your own feelings, and the needs which are the source of those feelings, you're not going to be able to be in touch with anyone else's feelings and needs. Okay, and here's the final one. Whoops. And, all right, insult me again. You boring old man. Now watch what I do. First I have to go here. And get some self-empathy. Interesting, isn't it? I can't just... I find it impossible to immediately go to the stage of saying, are you feeling angry because you have a need for more excitement, for excitement in your life? Would you be willing to attend someone else's seminar? So I go to 3 stages, remember. I'm observing. When you said you boring old man, that's the observation. And then the feeling, projecting, you know, trying to guess his feeling. It's interesting. When you try to guess someone's feeling, even if you get it wrong, They'll correct you. They just appreciate that you're being empathic. If we guessed his feeling wrong, he would say, no, that's not it, but he would be appreciate that we're trying to contact him. So there's the observation. When you said, boring old man, were you feeling angry because you have a need for something exciting in your life? And there's the request, would you be willing to consider going to a different seminar? But interestingly enough, before I could say that, I have to get in touch with my own needs and feelings. Because otherwise I'd be blocked. Because initially everyone would get angry when they're insulted, isn't it? Or some emotional tension is there. And you have to release it by being in touch with your own feelings and needs. So I would go through the same exercise I did before. You know, I am feeling angry, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling depressed because I have a need for loving exchanges with devotees, open communication with devotees, non-critical communication with devotees. And then I feel comfortable to express some empathy or love for him. Does everyone understand that? Okay, we're going to go deeper into that, and next session we're going to have some of the devotees come up here and go through the four stages themselves. And this is really good kinetic training. Okay, so now Braja Bihari is going to help me with this next step. We're going to talk about blocks that interfere with communication. You want to sit down? We can sit down.
Okay. There's mic. What I use?
There's several mics. Okay. So you just tell me where you want to chime in. Okay. So there's certain mentalities that will block our communication. And these mentalities are short, listed here. There's criticizing, blaming, fixing others, insulting, punishing, rewarding, and demanding. Can you say something about that? Okay.
There's different ways that we can look at this, but one way is, can you see that?
That's a problem.
Okay, well, it says again, I'll repeat them, criticizing, blaming, fixing others, insulting, punishing, rewarding, and demanding. And one way that I discuss these generally is that in learning these communication techniques that Maharaj is teaching us, it's important to make a very important distinction between problems that belong to us, is that okay to get this? And problems that belong to the other person. Right? Because if we actually analyzed these, if we could see them, then we would see that generally what we do, we have a tendency. And this is kind of a nice little sound bite to remember. How you sound bite in Croatian? Yeah.
Short sound that means a lot.
Is that we tend to take on other people's problems as if they are our own. Right? So it's really helpful in practically any kind of situation to consider, especially when there's some kind of difficulty, some kind of miscommunication, to decide, is this my problem or does this problem belong to the other person? A nice way to, like a couple of examples may be helpful. Like if, for example, some of you may be staying in the room. How many of you are staying with someone else in your room this week? Only a few? Most of you have your own place? Okay, so if your roommate, whether it's your spouse or another brahmachari or whatever, if he or she snores, right, snoring, they have that in Croatian?
Yeah.
Yeah. if he or she snores, is it your problem or is it the person who's snoring's problem? In other words, does it in a very tangible way, is it affect you or does it affect the person snoring? Who? Us. Why? Right. They're sleeping, dreaming of Krishna. They're going to get up from Mangal Arati, Hari Bol. And you're going to be... Right. So that's a pretty simple one. Now, what if you're a temple president? How many of you are temple presidents?
Okay.
Half of you. Very good. If you're a temple president and one of the devotees in your temple is feeling discouraged, does it tangibly and concretely affect you or the other devotee? It's a little harder, right? You? Okay, he says temple president. How many of you say the temple president? How many of you say it's the devotee feeling discouraged? You're right. The second one is right. Because, you know, you may not even know that the person's discouraged. But you may just, you know, be taking nice maha prasadam, paneer sabji, and jalebis and everything. And the other devotee is walking around like this, right? So, it's important to understand that that devotee has the problem. It doesn't mean that by saying that they own the problem that we're not going to help them. It's not like I'm from New York. Maharaj, you're also from New York? Yeah, right. So in New York they tell me, hey buddy, it's not my problem. Right, but that's not what we mean by this. But rather, by making this distinction, we can help the other person in the best way. Now, if that same devotee is feeling discouraged and goes to all the other devotees in the temple and says, don't listen to the authorities anymore. Actually, let's go into the treasury and take all the money and start our own temple. Now, whose problem is that? Is it now the devotee's problem or the temple president's problem? Yeah, now it's really concretely, you know, when all of a sudden the temple president has to do all the artiques and there's no money to buy ghee, and, you know, it becomes quite a serious. But by making this distinction, if my roommate is snoring, I have to be assertive. I have to either roll them over or earplugs or move to another place. But I have to do something. But when the other person owns a problem, it's a different approach. So when when we do those things, even interestingly enough, giving advice or criticizing, it's often because we're taking on their problems and dealing with it as if it was our problem. Does that make sense? No, it's not. No. Which way is my head? Because in India, you go like this, that means yes. Yeah, I live in India. No, it's not. It's not a good idea to take on other people's problems. Like, for example, if you're a temple president and you have that tendency to do that, to take on other people's problems. Often what will happen over the years as the devotees will remain dependent upon you. And Srila Prabhupada, that famous letter to Karandar Prabhu in 1972, he wanted the devotees to be independently thoughtful. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada, in the early, you have the letter? Thank you. Krishna consciousness movement is for training men to be independently thoughtful and competent in all types of departments of knowledge and action, not for making bureaucracy. Once there is bureaucracy, the whole thing will be spoiled. Bureaucracy is, in this sense, is kind of like Big Daddy will take on everybody's problems. There must be always individual striving and work and responsibility, competitive spirit, not that one shall dominate and distribute benefits to the others, and they do nothing but beg from you, and you provide. Yeah, well, no, just... And we could see this, especially in the early days of ISKCON. Someone, joins a temple, and 3 months later they're sent to China or something to start a temple. You know, Prabhupada didn't keep them, just he really wanted them to be independently thoughtful, go out and do great things. So this distinction can be very helpful and something to keep in mind as we go through the rest of this seminar, that we avoid taking on other people's problems as if they're our own.
Okay, Marge? Yeah. So another problem with taking on other people's problems is you actually get sick. And there's all sorts of, we mentioned it before, there's all sorts of body syndromes that occur. Like when you take on people's problems, you have back problems after that because you're taking on that particular burden. So we see that symptom in many leaders of ISKCON. You know, temple presidents, gurus, etc. like that.
I know.
You know.
I resemble that remark.
Okay. And so all these mentalities that we just mentioned can create in the people who are giving out that energy, they can create guilt, shame, and depression. And so let's skip over that part. So we're going to talk about common behaviors that block us from empathically connecting with each other. I don't know if you can see this. These are the four things right up here, actually, on the other thing here, on the piece of paper. Diagnosis, denial, demand, and deserve language. And we mentioned this yesterday, that diagnosis means that when we judge someone, we pass some judgment on their activities or their mentality, we deny. Denial is denial of responsibility.
What's an example of diagnosis?
A diagnosis, all right, let's say something to me.
Maharaj, I just can't get everything done. I'm too busy, and I think I just need a break.
But Bihar, you're depressed.
How do you know?
I'm diagnosing you.
Oh, okay.
I'm your psychiatrist. You have inferiority complex? Let me check the DSM-4. The DSM-4 is our diagnostic manual. So that's diagnosis.
I think you're taking on my problem.
That's right. So we're... Diagnose means to just project what you think someone else is doing. Even, I maybe, let's give an example. I'm speaking loudly. Braja Bihari, and then you'll think, yell.
I should yell at you?
No. You're diagnose what I just did.
You're raising your voice because something happened in your childhood. Did your mother raise her voice at you whenever?
Yeah, that's diagnosing. Or he might say, why are you yelling at me?
Oh, okay.
But in different cultures, that would be considered soft talking. I remember one time I was in...
like New York.
Yeah, I was in our temple in New Orleans. There's all Bengali devotees there.
Nice.
And they were cooking in the kitchen. And my room is right above the kitchen. And it was so loud, I thought they were killing each other. I rushed down to the kitchen. And I said, what's happening? Are you fighting? He said, no, this is just the way we talk with each other. So that's diagnosis. Okay, that's good. We were able. So denial. One example of that too? Denial of responsibility.
Well, I just know that denial ain't a river in Egypt.
Denial. The Nile River. Yeah, it's one of the original places where people were born. Anyway, so denial. All right, so they wouldn't understand that. So say something to me and I'll...
Maharaj, I'm just, you know, I don't think I want to do my service anymore. I really need a change of scenery.
You are making me really angry. You are making me depressed. You're hurting my heart. You're disturbing my whole life.
How's that?
You know. Because,
okay.
See, the point is, I'm not taking, denial means I'm not taking responsibility for my own feelings. I'm throwing them on him. In other words, why am I feeling unhappy, depressed, and anxiety? Because I have certain, what?
Needs.
No. Needs. It's very important. Feelings are all, I'll keep repeating this again and again and again. Feelings are always connected to needs. My needs. And I'm demanding that who fulfill those needs? Bhaja Bihari. And when he doesn't do it, there's anger. That's denial. Okay, we'll do demand. Want to do demand?
Go ahead.
Demand, you know, or you want me, I'll demand something of you.
Alright.
Bring me that book.
Which one?
That one.
Oh.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, and alright, so don't do what I say now.
Alright.
No, that's alright. No, it's,
trained in this class.
No, he did what I said. But, no, it's actually an important part of it too. Because he did what I said, but not from his heart. That's not what we want. He did what I said, but he wasn't happy about it. Now, after some time of doing that with me, guess what will happen with him? He will explode. Don't show us how you explode.
Get it yourself.
Yeah, get it yourself. There was one story that was told about a man was married to a woman. That's interesting. So, it's called you. So there was a and he was always giving in to his wife. His wife would always make demands, do this, and he just said, yes, whatever you want. Your wish is my desire. Then after about 5 years, but it happened to be the time when she was 8 months pregnant, she just asked for a little thing. Can I have a cup of water? And he said, you're always asking me for things. So he exploded. So that's the problem with the demand scenario. Because he's not giving from what? Not giving from the heart. Oh, so let's do it the other way. Don't give in to me. So, can you bring me the book?
No, I'm busy.
Not can you. Bring me the book.
No, I mean, you know, why?
Because I said so!
And who are you?
I'm an ISKCON guru!
There's so many ISKCON gurus.
I'm the god brother of your spiritual master!
There's so many god brothers of my spiritual master.
You nonsense!
I know you are, but what am I?
So, you what? See, that you're just, you can go on in a second, but there's two ways that you can receive a demand. One is you submit unwillingly, and the other way is you actually fight against it like he did. Instead, I should be saying, Bhaja Bihari, would you be willing to do it? And if he says no, I just have to find someone else to do it. But if I actually am making a demand, you know what I would do? If he says no, I would either yell at him or... Okay, I understand. You know, I know where you're at. Like that. Okay. Okay. And deserve is the final one. When someone does something wrong, like he committed an offense against me, right? I'm just joking. He called me a boring old man. You deserve to suffer. I will pray to the deities that you will take birth again and again and again and be old again and again and again and have people say the same thing to you. You deserve it. So that's another way we block communication.
Right. I think an important point to kind of put this in Krishna conscious context in some ways is that especially, I guess, perhaps one in three, maybe all of them, but no, probably one in three especially, someone might say, well, but doesn't the spiritual master sometimes do that? Doesn't he sometimes demand? Didn't Srila Prabhupada demand things of us? Right? Didn't he tell Tamal Krishna Maharaj, China? Right? And even though we heard in class this morning that Tamal Krishna Maharaj generally was able to wiggle out of things, he wasn't able to wiggle out of China. He tried everything. Right? And we sometimes, the spiritual master may diagnose us.
duhovni učitelj napravi dijagnozu našu.
But one thing that's really important to understand is that there's that loving relationship with the spiritual master and the disciple that makes all of these things, they don't become blocks anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Srila Prabhupada writes about that in the Bhagavatam, I think it's the Bhagavatam, where he says that the spiritual master doesn't generally chastise the neophyte devotee. Especially the chastisements are there for the advanced devotee. The advanced devotee can take it because the relationship is very thick. An example that comes to my mind is that we know Srila Prabhupada demanded so much of his disciples. Then one time in, I believe it was Hong Kong, but I can't remember exactly the place. So there was an Indian gentleman, and he was thinking of donating an apartment or some land to ISKCON. And the devotee said, Srila Prabhupada, if you ask him, he'll definitely do it. If we ask him, but Prabhupada said, no, I won't do that, because if he says no to me, it'll be a big offense, and it won't be helpful for his spiritual life. So you know, so that relationship, there wasn't that surrender that hadn't developed yet. There wasn't that love, and therefore Srila Prabhupada wasn't going to say, you please do this. So we putting that a little bit in that context of love and surrender. Is that all right?
Good. That's a very good perspective. I was thinking of something else too as you were talking, Braja. That one of the ways that we can distinguish a demand from a request is how the person who's making the request or demand responds when it's not met. So in the context of dealing with Prabhupada or a spiritual master, when people didn't do what Prabhupada said, Prabhupada remained loving and merciful. Like in the example I was giving, if Braja didn't do what I said, how did I become? Was I loving? Oh, I love you. No, I hate you. What?
You love me, get it yourself.
But I exhibited animosity and hate. Whereas we find Prabhupada had many disciples who didn't follow the basic what? Four regulated principles. There were sannyasis who came back with long beards. Not that we have anything against beards, but with long beards. And Prabhupada would cry when he saw them coming back. They were practically in Prabhupada's face disobeying his instructions or what people might have thought as demands. But even though Prabhupada phrased them as demands, they were actually requests. It's interesting. I mean, Prabhupada never rejected anyone, to my knowledge. There was, of course, one person who was so offensive, Prabhupada said, that was Jamadagni. Yeah, the people who actually were interfering with the spiritual lives of devotees, and Prabhupada told them to stay away.
But even that story, later Prabhupada told Sridhar Maharaj, please find him and bring him back.
Bring him back, see? So Prabhupada's love was unconditional. When your love is unconditional, even what may sound as a demand is no longer a demand. So it's really not so much the words, but the intention that's important. You understand? It's the intention you give. Just like the other day, we arrived here and I was very hungry and I was saying to some of the disciples work with me, where's the prasadam? Get it, now. You're in Maya. Immediately, serve it. But I don't think they heard that as a demand. Did you? Yes, they did. No, they didn't. They heard that as just like, you know, externally it's a demand. But when you have a close relationship, it's not like that anymore. Because there's a trusting exchange between the people. You know the person's not going to reject you, get angry with you for not fulfilling that, okay? Interesting, isn't it? So it's not as simple as it may seem, like diagnosis and denial and demand and deserve. Can we go on to the next one? So we're going to cover diagnosis and we're going to do an exercise. This is an interesting exercise. Do you want to lead them in the section?
Well, I'm not sure because I'll do the next one.
Okay. We went over this before, that in a culture where there is a lot of use of judgmental language, we said this yesterday, then there's more violence in that culture. And unfortunately, we do find a lot of use of violent language in amongst the society or in the society of devotees, isn't it? This is what we have to change to have better relationships. You may say it's just words, but words shape your consciousness. You can try it one day. You could just look, I'll try with Braj. You demon, you infidel, rakshasa, horrible.
You're a rascal.
Yeah.
You're a nonsense.
So he said the words just evoke a certain emotion in me that I didn't even intend to have. Or if I say, you know, you're a devotee, you're dear to Krishna, Krishna loves you.
You're a nice guy yourself.
You live in Vrindavan, you know, I'd really like to sit down and have some Krishna katha, you know, just like, woo. So you see the words, I'm the same person, he's the same person, there's a different exchange there. So words do shape our consciousness. Just like in the Cold War, in America they call the Russians the evil empire. I guess that was in relationship to some sort of movie or something like that.
I think the movie came later. Star Wars?
Star Wars, yeah. Anyway. Sorry, I don't know too much about movies. And also, people watch television. Does everyone know what a television is? Now, you've been in the movement too long. So, nobody here watches television, goes to the movies or anything. Good. You're a pure Vaishnava. So, it said that, I forget how many times someone sees an act of violence by the time they're an adult. It's like hundreds of thousands of times you see someone killed and you enjoy it. The hero, generally the hero kills several people by the end of the film. The end of the film, the climax of the film is when several people get killed or blown up. Okay? This we went over before. The more a culture uses words that classify and judge the higher level of violence, that's what we call a domination culture. My vision is to transform ISKCON from a domination culture to a culture of the heart, where people are doing things willingly. Yeah,
and it's found often in organizations like ours because we do have very high standards, right? So when there's high standards, there's a tendency to be judgmental of those who don't live up to those standards. Or putting it in, you know, Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama, that the Kanishta is struggling so much just, you know, to keep their neck above water in Krishna consciousness. When they see someone who's having difficulty, they kind of have to, they think, by putting them down, it'll give them a little bit more of a boost up. Whereas once we come to the Madhyama platform, there's more of the idea that a rising tide lifts all the ships. You know, is that a saying in Croatia? Yeah. So it's also a point of struggling to come to the Madhyama platform, so that we don't think we need to be judgmental of others in our own quest for Krishna consciousness.
Good. And one interesting thing that Marshall Rosenberg makes is that when people get more educated, they get more adept at calling people names and judging people with more educated language. He gave the example that if you're driving down the road and someone cuts you off, what do you call him? Anybody have any?
Idiot. They don't want to say it in the company of Vaishnavas.
Okay, but just say some nice word like idiot or... What? Fool. Jerk.
Budala.
Moron. And then when you get more educated, he said when you get your PhD, what do you call them? Psychopath. So, you know, even educated... So educated people have ways of insulting each other that doesn't appear so bad, but it's just as bad. Okay. Denial responsibility.
What's this?
I want to do a... this is just the blocks right now, yeah. So, denial responsibility, went over this. Languages that places the blame outside of ourselves, like I did with Brajabihari. You made me angry. You made me this, you made me that. Nobody, when you learn this language of EC, empathic communication, you'll learn that nobody can make you feel any way except for Krishna. You have emotional freedom. No matter what someone does, no matter what name someone calls you, you just get in touch with your own feelings and they have no more control over you. It's freedom. I mean, just to give you an example of my own mother. Brother will appreciate this. I joined the Hare Krishna movement in 1971. And my mother immediately communicated with me through her husband. You're killing your mother. She's going to be dead very soon. And you're going to be... Your mother did the same thing?
Threatened to commit suicide.
Oh, that was worse. Threatened to commit suicide. She's going to be dead very soon, and you're going to be responsible for her death. And guess what? Now it's how many years later? 1971, 2007, you know, you figure it out. And she's more alive than me.
Because you're an old man.
Yeah. No, she's 80 years old and she goes swimming every day and exercises more than I do.
Nice,
yeah. Nice old lady. You met her.
Yes.
Praj met her in New York. Anyway, so...
And she likes devotees now.
Yeah. And she's proud of me. Whenever she meets a devotee, she says, "My son, the guru." Right?
And my mother threatened to have me deprogrammed. But when she found out how much it costs, she said, "No, it costs too much." But then she left her body in Vrindavan Dham,
right? Chanting, hearing the holy names. Haribo. That's nice. Okay, so maybe we'll do a little exercise. Let's see. Okay, so let's list some examples of devotional activities you have to do. I wish I had the board here to write on. That would be... It really hurts not having that. Okay. Any volunteers? Anything you have to do in Krishna consciousness? What? You have to chant 16 rounds, all right? Okay. We did a little bit of this exercise yesterday. What do you have to do?
Moramo donositi odluke za sebe.
That's an interesting one. You have to make a decision for yourself. You don't have to. You can have someone else do. But, okay, so let's take these two exercises and transform them into something we call decision language. That I... All right, you said you have to what? Chant 16 rounds. Why are you chanting 16 rounds? We did this exercise already, but we can do it again for a few seconds. Why? All right. Okay. So you're choosing to chant 16 rounds. We went over this yesterday. So, because you want, you need, you desire to please your spiritual master. So we can transform the language. Actually, we did this exercise yesterday, so we don't have to do it again. I choose to. The standard form is I choose to because I want to or need to or I value something. I choose to do... In the beginning of learning this new language, it's good to do the Vaidhi aspect. Vaidhi aspect means you use the formula there. I choose to do this because I need this. In the beginning, you're going to sound a little weird. Every time someone asks you why you're doing that, you'll say, "I choose to do that because I need that. I choose to do that because I need that." But after a while, you'll be able to phrase it differently because it becomes ingrained in the consciousness. And it gives you a lot of freedom. Just those words saying that I am choosing voluntarily to do this because I need or value or want this. It's a lot of freedom. Try it sometimes. I am choosing to get up early because I value, I have a need for spiritual advancement, I like Mangalarti, I value the association of devotees in the morning. And wow, it's so blissful. I mean, I have a blog, so I wrote on my blog one time about this. I said, When I get up in the morning, I fill myself with positive expectations. Not that, oh God, I've got to get up. The clock's ringing, the damn clock. I said, I am going to have a good time this morning. This is going to be great. Wow, I get to see the deities. I get to hear the holy names. I get to do this. I am so fortunate. You're thanking at the same time. It's actually an interesting thing. I'm so thankful. I'm so fortunate. Wow! And then I jump up out of bed. Instead of, I got to. So that's important. You want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say that we have more freedom and we have more willpower than we think.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how many of you think that starting today and for the next year, you can, whether you're even if you're living away from a temple or if you're living near a temple, you can get up at 4 o'clock every single morning and be ready for Mangal Arati by 4:30 and be either in the temple or in the temple room in your house by 4:29 every single day for the next year without one day fail?
He's asking if you have the ability to do that.
Yeah. Well, how many of you? Yeah? Okay. 1, 3. Okay. And then what if we said that if you did that for the next year, you would get $1 billion. Right? So, I mean, think of all the preaching you can do, build Mayapur, you know, buy half of Croatia. Whatever. Then if you were to get $1 billion, what day today? July 16th? So by July 16th, 2008, you'd get a check for for $1 billion. And how many of you think you could do that? Not everybody.
Increase it, $2 billion.
Yeah, $2 billion. No. All right. She's got her hand both. So you can see, we can, we actually, so we are choosing not to do many things. So there's a lot of freedom in our choice.
Very good. And then another important point is that whatever we do, we should instill in our hearts that we're doing it in a joyful way. Like I mentioned about the Mangal Arati, that joyfully we're going to Mangal Arati. And another point is that when we bring people to Krishna consciousness, I often use this example, we don't push them to Krishna's lotus feet, we attract them to Krishna's lotus feet. In other words, there's a positive, joyful mood. Not that if you don't chant 16 rounds, Prabhupada said, what? You're fallen, you're a rascal, you're this, you're that. I mean, nobody's going to want to chant 16 rounds if just there's that negativity there. So if you chant 16 rounds, you advance in spiritual life, you can do so many things, etc., etc., etc. So joyful and playful and the
voluntary. Well, you know, in that regards, Maharaj, there's a nice letter from Prabhupada where he's talking about initiation.
Yeah.
And he's saying, do not canvass. He says, invite people to the temple, give them prasadam, tell them the benefits of devotional service. But he said, do not canvass them to move in, and especially do not canvass them for initiation. And then he quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. I can't remember exactly. Bhaktivinoda Padiya. Sharanai Padiya, I forget how it goes, but he's saying that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is begging for the mercy of the holy name. So the prospective disciple, the prospective person coming to Krishna consciousness, our job is to try to instill with them a desire where they're begging for Krishna consciousness, not that we're begging them to become Krishna conscious.
Exactly.
Not canvassing them. Those are the words Prabhupada used.
And when we're personally doing our devotional activities, we should be having fun doing it. When you're chanting, how many people have fun chanting japa here? Raise your hand if you have fun chanting japa. Good. How many people have fun kirtan? More. How many people, yeah, I was going to say that. How many people have fun eating prasadam? Okay, everybody. So the same fun. When I first joined the movement, you know how I used to picture the beads? Like sweet balls. I pictured each bead. You know how? Another thing I did is each time I would chant one round when I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, I would eat one sweet bowl to reward myself. That's good. Don't try that at my age. I mean, that would be dangerous. So, everything is done like Kevalananda Kanda. It is simply blissful. It is always vacation for a devotee. So, look at all the devotional activities like, instead of should, must, have to, we get to do them. It's so wonderful. I get to chant my rounds this morning in the Association of Devotees. Wow! What fun! Really, you can condition your mind to think you're having fun in anything material, and that's not fun, but in spiritual things, you're actually having fun. I mean, just like I look, like Tripagram, for example, he thinks it's fun to wrestle. How many people here think it's fun to wrestle? Three people in the room. Because they're conditioned with certain modes of nature. And the rest of us think that is the most boring activity in the three worlds. Because he's conditioned. He's a conditioned soul. So if you become unconditioned, and you actually start to see how these activities, and this is verified by the acharyas, how these activities are fun, then you approach devotional service. It's not a struggle anymore. Getting up early, chanting your 16 rounds, you'll begin to think 16 rounds, only 16 rounds? What do the acharyas pray for? Millions of mouths, tongues to chant? You'll be thinking, wow, I want millions of mouths, tongues chant the holy names. Okay. Instead of what? Fear, guilt, shame, or obligation. Yeah. Instead of functioning out of these life sapping or life taking away life consciousness, I choose to. Okay. And now demands. Okay. Do you want to take this chapter? Type of language implies if others don't comply. We did this already. We actually did most of this already spontaneously. They will pay the price.
And didn't you come have a saying about leave that up to Krishna or something like that?
Yeah. Well, that's about deserve. That vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. But, you know, if you don't do what I say, there's some price to be paid. We did that already with Braja Vihari. The price to be paid would be I get angry with him. So, we can do this exercise very briefly. Okay, so you can think, if you ask someone to do something for you, can some of you, let's take two people who can phrase it as a demand. Just two volunteers right now. Ask someone to bring the book and give it to you. Simple thing. Phrase it as a demand. Yeah. Give me the book. Okay, now phrase it as a request. Yeah, would you be willing to bring it for me? And it's the attitude we said before. It's the attitude that one has when one is making the request or demand. And the final one is actions which went over deserve a punishment or reward. And this is basic thing. Certain actions deserve to be rewarded. Certain actions deserve to be punished. A key word is deserve. And the point is, as Braja was saying before, what was the quote I gave? Oh, yeah. Okay. The quote is from the Bible. I think most of you come from that background. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. In other words, even in a Vedic culture, if someone is to be punished, the only person who does it is the king. It's not for you to become what we call a vigilante. A vigilante is someone who takes the law in their own hands. Because the king is the representative of Krishna. In other words, if someone does something wrong, it'll be the law of karma that punishes him, or Krishna directly. You don't have to punish or curse. Krishna Kshetra Prabhu Ki Jai. Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. We'll be finished in a second. We'll finish up this. We got 5 minutes more. Do you want to say anything about this? Or? deserves he? No. Okay. All right. We're almost finished with this chapter.
I mean, it's just the only exception to that. And why, one of the reasons it's hard to be a manager or a leader in ISKCON is because sometimes it is your service to correct people and to make sure, you know, the treasurer isn't running off with the treasury and things like that. But in general, the mood of a devotee, and I hope this ties in well with what you're thinking, presenting here, is that our mood is to try to help other people. So sometimes if correcting them is required, we do that. Sometimes if praising them helps, but we're not attached to either. We're attached to helping them. Although I think what Maharaj is going to present later is that sometimes neither of those help.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the praising and the correcting have to be in tune with helping them understand their needs.
Mm-hmm.
And just like there's a, we were talking about this yesterday, Raj, there is certain techniques that managers learn. There's one technique called the one-minute manager. Anyone familiar with that? Yeah. And in this technique, if you really want to get someone to do something, I guess we could act this out.
All right, so I'm typing away.
So he's typing away, but he's doing something wrong. You know, he's typing the wrong thing. And so I'm saying, Braj, you're a great devotee, Braj.
I know.
You know, I really appreciate, you know, the wonderful service you're doing. You know, for years we've been serving together.
Duh.
And, you know, just like you added so much to my spiritual life and everything like that. Wow. You know, I don't know how I could live without you. You know, you need to correct that. That's really bad. I mean, work on something else. I don't know if you really understand how to type. Did you ever learn how to type? The spelling is horrible, Braj. Okay. But I love you. That's called the one-minute manager. It's called the sandwich technique. We learned it in ISKCON in our management seminar. We did. Actually, the whole GVC practiced it. It's manipulation. And guess what? People sense it after a while. After you've been one-minute managed five times, you know what's coming. You know, someone comes to me. Just like I have one of my godbrothers, sometimes I have to ask money from him. And I say, Maharaj, oh, you're a great sannyasi. And he said, oh, what's coming? You're not going to ask me for money this time. Because we're asking money for some projects or something like that. So it's the same sort of technique where you just praise or chastise someone. It's the same sort of technique used to train what? Animals. It's like, did anyone ever see those jumping porpoises?
Jumping
porpoises. You know how they train them? They give them little fish. Dolphins. Porpoises, dolphins. It's all the same to me. They give them fish. So the same way sometimes we attempt to train devotees. Devotee does something nice, does a lot of artis, real surrender. Okay, here's the fish. Like that. And it really, the problem with that, it doesn't develop in the devotee's heart a desire to do something from the heart. You develop a desire. We do the same thing with children, too. They desire the reward rather than enjoy joyfully do the activity. Or the punishment, they desire to avoid punishment. And ultimately, they become rebellious.
Well, I was just going to say that this can even apply. It's interesting, some of these principles we can apply in, even, for example, in management. I can remember the first book distribution marathon I ever participated in. The winner got to go to India. So somehow we were basing it more on the money that was collected than the books distributed, I remember. So the last day on Christmas Eve, I was $60 behind this one devotee, Annapurna Mataji. So I wrote, I called up my mother and asked her for $75. So I got the $75 and I went to India. But I remember the mood of that marathon. It wasn't so friendly because we were all kind of like even a little bit unhappy when the other devotee did well. So I remember that, and a few years later, somehow I was the Sankirtan leader. And I was thinking about that marathon and thinking about what could be done differently. So instead of having a competition like that, I set a very high goal, extremely high, and I said if we all reach this, we can all go to India. And the whole mood of the whole month of that Sankirtan marathon changed completely. And it wasn't even so fruitive that everyone wanted to go to India. They almost forgot that. But they just got so much in the mood of encouraging each other and happy when the other person did more than them. And so, in other words, my point is that we can apply these principles in a variety of different ways.
Wonderful example. So, and this is pretty much the end. It's a good idea to keep a journal when you use this blocking language so you know when to change it. And then we can change our language to empathic language. And we're not... Actually, we're not going to do this exercise today. Maybe we do it in the beginning tomorrow or the next day. We don't have time for that because it's time for the next seminar. So, the next seminar, okay. Coming attraction. We may start with this particular exercise where we form groups of three. And you see here, we're working in groups of three across the top of the paper. We're going to write these four topics that block us, and then we're going to write examples of how we use them with others, and then ask your partner or the two partners to change those, and then switch between the different people in groups of three. That's called triads instead of dyads. And then when we finish that, we're finished with these four blocks of communication, and we're going to go on to exercises about the four components of empathic communication and learn how to make observations free of judgments, express our feelings, develop feeling language, there's many more feelings than that, and understand what our basic needs are in the seven categories we went over yesterday. So it's going to be an exciting day, and it's going to be day after tomorrow. And it's going to be one mainly of exercise. Like I said, in the beginning we're going over philosophy, presenting things, and then we get into a lot of exercises to refine and our ability to apply this knowledge. Okay? We want to thank everybody for sitting so nicely. You've all been great. Give yourselves a hand for being very good students. We want to thank you. Okay, Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.